Welcome to Gonkcast, an AwTekker podcast. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And we're back at long last with another bonus episode about your emails. We've been gone for quite a bit now, and while we're still planning to do another main episode on a bunch more AE bootleg soon, we thought we'd pop in and say hello, catch up with you and each other, and get back into the swing of things with a casual chat with you guys via the emails you've sent in lately. I know listeners are probably sick of my excuses, but here's what happened. We're hiring a bunch of new faculty at my university, so I've been obligated to attend countless Zoom calls and presentations with prospective candidates this entire month. And to be honest, the last thing I wanted to do was get back online and call Dan. No offense.
None taken. I wouldn't want to talk to me either.
I'm also teaching a 3-hour class on Zoom this semester, so it feels like I'm running another podcast right now, honestly, which is rough. But anyway, that means we haven't gotten to chat much either lately, Dan. So what's been up with you?
No, yeah, the last time, besides your random texts here and there, was when you were actually down, saw each other in person, which was nice. Otherwise, yeah, just same old stuff for me, reading, listening to some tunes, hanging out.
Yeah, I've got not too much to report. I did get some new, a new soundbar with a sub and everything for my TV, and it's not like Audiophile approved or anything like that. I think audiophiles just hate soundbars, period. But it is kind of nice to have a pretty decent system in my living room in the main area of my house, because it's the first time I've been able to in a long time to be able to actually kind of blast AwTekker, for example, through the whole house. Not that my wife lets me do that very often, but
that's what I was gonna say.
it's kind of cool, especially listening to the bootlegs we've been listening to. It's nice to play those loud in particular. But I wonder what you think about this, but I'm just I like to listen to stuff on as many different setups as possible. Whether it's really great. I have a really nice setup at my desk and everything like that, or if it's just some kind of normie, soundbar setup or so, just listening to music, especially something like AwTekker, in different setups, I feel like I always hear something new from it. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. I do a good portion of my, most of my listening on headphones, but I agree. Yeah. I got a sound bar and, record player and all that crap. Listen on my little, portable Bluetooth speaker. Again, don't add us with the audiophile shit, I think, there's definitely certain albums that are better one way or the other, headphones or speakers, but there's also, plenty that are sort of, the best of both worlds. And I think you're right. I think electronic music is, and AwTekker, more specifically is really lends itself to that. When headphones, you can hear the little intricacies, and and the speakers, you could feel the fun and the dance of it.
Yeah, and it's not it always works or whatever, but it's I want to try listening to AwTekker on the beach with
it works. Yeah,
little Bluetooth speaker. I want to try walking in the woods with my shitty AirPods. I want to try mm-hmm. all different kinds. It's fun.
Exactly.
Well, also on the topic of catching up, we got a bunch of emails and tweets from listeners sharing their Spotify raps with us. This was a little while ago, of course. Listener Steve and listener Peter, just for some examples, who were both in the top 0.05% of AwTekker listeners. Do you remember what your Spotify Wrapped was? I'm a lowly Tidal user, and we have not even a poor man's version of the year Wrapped thing. But do you remember what yours looked like?
I was in the tops 1% of AwTekker, but I can't remember if that was this year or last year, I mean 2 years ago, whatever day it is now. My top one's always Bob Dylan, and it makes the rap not so fun because it's just always Dylan and then whatever else crap.
Yeah, I mean, I do use Last.fm, and of course AwTekker was my top there, and my number two was guess.
Number two, I don't know.
Guesscom.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. So that's how that went. Weirdly, I was looking at my top albums. Of course, this is my top album, and then I have, which I love, and then Oversteps is number two.
Nice.
And I'm not even a huge fan of Oversteps. Mm-hmm. And then My top, I'm just looking at like the little mini list that, that Last.fm is showing me. Like my top five tracks are all Oversteps tracks.
Damn.
Which tells me that I really, really tried with this album. Like I think it, you know, I just can't really love Oversteps. But when we talked about it and did that episode on it, like I was, you know, just captivated by the fact that like, why don't I love an Autechre album? So I just listened to it over and over and over, and you know, it just never clicked.
Well, yeah, at least you can like officially say you don't enjoy it. No one can give you shit. You know, you tried hard enough, you know. That's more than most people, you know. Most people, if you don't like a record, you know, you listen to it once or twice and you never again. But to have it be your top one, that's dedication.
Yeah, it's true. And I do want to acknowledge before anybody asks us that I know that Spotify is canceled right now because of Joe Rogan and all this stuff. Actually, I was wondering, we're just doing a lot of like casual rambling up front here, but like I was wondering if UK people, do they know who Joe Rogan is, or like are they just kind of perplexed by this whole Spotify thing?
Yeah, like do they know that he's like the Fear Factor guy? Because that's where I know him from. I've honestly never listened to his podcast and don't intend to. I did used to love Fear Factor. In fact, like during the pandemic, it was on like one of the streaming things we have, and I mean my wife tried to watch some episodes because you know at that point you're just hurting for stuff, and one, it was just like too surreal for it to be Joe Rogan, and also I forgot how disgusting it was, so we only made it through like two episodes.
I did the same thing. I watched a bunch of Deal or No Deal from like 2006.
Oh, that's a good show. I love game shows.
Yeah, that was good times. I wanted to ask, I'm always tempted to like on Twitter or something to like post about albums that I really love in the hopes that maybe other people who also obsess over Autechre, you know, I obsess over Autechre, so maybe this would be something you would like too. And I just like the idea of if I discover something, if I could get them like one new listener, that would be fun. But, but I don't know. I kind of want to keep the Twitter like Autechre focus. But while we're just chatting up front here, do you have any other favorite albums from 2021 you want to shout out since we're catching up on 2021 right now?
Yeah, I think my favorite was that record from Squid, Bright Green Field. I like still love that record. Listen to it all the time. I also, from the same record label, I hated it at first, but then it just like, I don't know, something about it like grabbed me and made me keep listening to it. The Black Country New Road for the first time. Mm. And their new record actually comes out at midnight tonight. So that should be cool. Looking forward to that. You know, of course, Donda. Loved that from Kanye. In the electronic area, Dax Pearson, which is somebody you had told me about a couple years ago. I really liked his record. It wasn't quite as good as that. You told me about that live record from a couple years ago. I still love that record. But I did like his new one, the Nerve Bumps, A Queer Divine Dissatisfaction. What about you?
Yeah, love that one. Also, I think my favorite album of the year was Tirza, Color Grade, which it's kind of like, you know, it's electronic in a sense, but kind of like a, you know, experimental pop, but truly weird. I love the new Low album. Thinking about possibly seeing them when they come to come near me nice. Next month if I can stomach the COVID. it seemed like, you know, slightly down year overall. I did want to ask though before we move on, do you think we'll get this year a new Autechre album or something? Because their average seems to be about 2 years. Like there are times where they're doing one a year early on. There are other times where they take like a 3-4 year break, but you know, on average it's like every 2 years. So last stuff was in 2020. You think we'll get something new this year?
You know, I feel like I hate to jinx it, but I feel like probably, you know, they seem like two guys that were probably, you know, already locked down in their rooms.
Yeah.
But then when you add a you know, an actual lockdown on top of it, I'm sure they you know, were in the studio and whatnot.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm hoping. I mean, not only for the podcast, but for, you know, my own personal enjoyment. It would be really nice. You know, I would say like I think we'd at least get an EP, but you know, the whole plus sign thing maybe kills the EP, but I hope so. If not, I hope we get like a you know, some sort of compilation, like the EP's thing, you know, with remixes or something, you know, other B-sides or something. I hope we get something from them this year.
Some new soundboards, maybe. I could see
that would be like nice. That. Even I'd take that.
they seem to be doing that like in their off years, mm-hmm. like releasing a bunch of soundboards lately. But all right, before we get into your emails, let me just remind you that our next episode will be about those AE bootlegs, more AE bootlegs. I promise we'll get to that soon. Won't disappear for another 2 months again. So be sure to tell us about your favorite bootlegs or any other AE thoughts that you've had on your mind lately. GonkCastPod@gmail.com or tweet us at GonkCastPod. But all right, Dan, what is our first email?
Yeah, our first email is from listener Simon, who says, after apparently many years absence, a new Guestcom mix has surfaced, and it's totally wicked. Essentially, it sticks old school hip hop and even electro tracks in the blender and catapults them into the 21st century sound world whilst remaining funky and without being too fragmented or difficult to listen to. Well worth a listen, and one of the best things that Guestcom Project has ever done, in my view.
Yeah, I was sort of reading about this when we were doing our Guestcom stuff, because I think this came out back in January of 2021, and it was kind of like a live set, part of a scam live stream from, the 2nd of January 2021. So I was reading about it and just didn't see much of a big deal about it, much of a kerfuffle. I feel like everybody just assumes, and I think rightly so from listening to it, that this is one of those Guestcom releases that Autech are probably not very involved in, especially it being kind of like a live DJ set or something like that. So, I kind of just overlooked it at the time, but I did check it out thanks to listener Simon's email here. And, it reminds me of some of those Guestcom releases that we weren't so hot on, like Skull Snap or Guestcom EP2 that tend to do that kind of, crate digging, breakbeat, record scratching kind of stuff. But I did appreciate that it was a lot more twisted and garbled than those are, mm-hmm.
I pretty much had the same look into it as you did. I had heard about it, and when I was researching for our Guestcom episodes, I saw it listed in the Rate Your Music and stuff forum. But yeah, it was the same kind of way. I didn't hear anything about it and sort of honestly forgot about it until this email. I listened to it and same way. I thought it was neat. I definitely want to spend some more time with it. I liked the kind of hip hop feel to it. It really seemed like, in the summertime, I'll pop that on outside, hanging out in the patio or something. It seems like sort of perfect for, just kind of that hang out, fun time sort of vibe. So I definitely saved it and I'm going to come back to it.
Yeah, I feel like if that's something you like about Guestcom, which, neither of us particularly do, but if you like that kind of returning to the old school hip hop electro stuff that pops up in Guestcom sometimes, I can totally understand why this would be your favorite Guestcom thing, because mm-hmm. I think it elevates that a lot higher than those other releases.
Yeah, I agree. And I sometimes like some of that stuff. I just kind of got to be in the mood for it. And like I said, I could see a mood that would arise, and I'll stick it in my pocket for when that happens.
Yeah, there were a couple kind of parties, barbecues that I went to where I put on the Autechers resident advisor mix, where it was just all old school hip hop. You remember that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that went over well. Everybody was digging that.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe this is the way to sneak it past the wives,
That's right. All right. Next up is from listener Peter, who writes, I was lucky enough to see Autechre live during their 2005 tour in Montreal. I was there by myself dancing and jumping around like a weirdo, but had a blast the whole time. It definitely seems like this was Autechre at their danciest. It remains the best sounding show I've ever heard. Everything was tuned perfectly for the venue. It remained a vivid enough memory that 3 years later, I would recognize the bits that ended up on Choristus. I listened to the bootleg of that show just now, and while it's pretty similar to the Glasgow show, I like the crazy and jammier extended ending of this one a lot more. Also, the ending drum pattern feels kind of similar to the second half of Under BOAC, which was always one of my favorite AE tracks. I ended up seeing them again in 2008, and while I enjoyed it a lot, for whatever reason, that show didn't feel like it had quite the same energy as the 2005 one did, though maybe that had something to do with either the venue or the fact that I was there seated the whole time due to being with my 6 months pregnant wife. I do like to think my unborn son enjoyed the beats. First off, can you believe what a saint this woman is that she went with him to while 6 months pregnant to an Autechre concert? Like, we were just joking about it, and we joke about it often, but like, our wives would never.
No. I did trick my wife into going and seeing them, but she was not pregnant and also didn't enjoy it. But what a trooper. Also, that child is a patrician straight from the womb. Just the other day, my mom was talking about she saw Hootie and the Blowfish while she was pregnant with my sister, and how it was my sister's first concert. So I would say Autechre's a little better than Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yeah, I would say. But I was checking out the there's sort of an audience recording of this Montreal performance, and of course it's interesting because we just went in depth on our last episode on the famous Glasgow 2005 set, the Untilted Tour. What's interesting about this, as Peter mentions, is that, you know, I was looking it up, and the Montreal show would have been about a month after the Glasgow show, and they're already AE living it essentially by adding. There's like an extra 20 minutes of material, really, that seems very jammy. Like, it gets very dreamy. Peter mentions the under BOAC sounding drums, which is true. It's got this kind of like slapping, clanky drum pattern, but it gets like very trippy and dreamy. And it just reminds me so much of AE Live that, like, by this point in the tour, they've started using the end of the set to explore, which, you know, it's neat to hear because I guess that's what sort of birthed Choristus, right? The jamming.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to know what is like the impetus for when they decide to do those jams, you know, because when we went through like all the AE Lives and all, you know, like some of them are, you know, much longer than others and right. You know, whatnot. I wonder, like, what triggers that? Is it, you know, this venue's just sounding great? Is the crowd reacting, you know, great? Are they just in a good mood? You know, like, I would really like to know, like, what causes them to do that, you know?
Yeah, I didn't do enough investigation, but I just sort of assumed that they're the kind of guys that they're not going to play the same set for a month straight. So
yeah,
by the time
boring,
they're that far
yeah.
into the tour, they're evolving it and twisting it and probably looking forward to when they get through the set. Of course, they aren't really compressing it here, but in those AE Live sets, they start actually compressing the main set so that they have even more space to jam and play around. But I don't know. It struck me as really interesting listening to this because the Montreal, I mean, because, you know, the whole thing about the Glasgow set is that it like takes off like a rocket and just never relents
yeah.
the whole time through. So it feels almost like it's very counterintuitive to then end with like 20 minutes of kind of, you know, I don't mean this in a bad way, but like noodling and exploring, you know, it's really a weird way to end. Like, it almost changes the entire feeling of the set.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. That is sort of an odd thing. It's almost, you know, backwards. You would sort of, you know, a lot of bands like start with the noodling and
right,
you know,
right.
and end up, you know, regular or whatnot. That is an interesting point.
Yeah. And the only other thing I wanted to mention was that I just feel like, and now my only experience with the 2008 set is through that reconstruction
yeah.
that was recently done. And to me, that sounds like if I could pick, that would be the show that I would want to be at, because there's just something about the lushness of the Choristus sounds and stuff. But, you know, I guess Peter didn't get to give it a fair shot because he had to sit down during that show. But do you have a preference maybe between those two kind of tours?
I love that recreation set too, you know. I don't know if it's just like from the way it's recorded or you know, the story behind it or what, but I think that is maybe my favorite live Autechre thing. But, you know, I Glasgow's a close second, and honestly it probably, you know, depends on my mood for the day. But I really love that replication set or whatever it's called.
I know. And honestly, since finishing the main discography on our podcast, I find that Choristus is the one I go back to most often. Like the kind of, I can't decide which Autechre I want to listen to, but I'm in an Autechre mood.
Yeah.
And I keep kind of just putting on Choristus.
Nice. Yeah. I tend to do like NTS or something like that, you know, just one of those like monster ones and listen to it until you don't feel like Autechre anymore.
I was kind of thinking, just as like a side question, and I should have given you a heads up about it, but I was thinking about this the other day because I was at a little get together with some people, and somebody mentioned that I have a podcast, and I was trying to explain that it's about this group Autechre who nobody had ever heard of, you know? And somebody was like, you know, you want to play a song, and then I was trying to think quickly, like, what would be a song that would, like, sum up, you know, what, like give them a good idea of what Autechre means, like, what that is. But, of course, then my wife was like, don't you dare play that at a party, you know. So I didn't get to. But, like, I really have been stumped on this. Like, what song would you pick, you know, not to, like, really match the mood of a party, but just to give somebody a quick idea of, like, this is what's interesting about Autechre.
Man, it's so hard because it's, like, every record is so different, you know? Like
I know.
I would be tempted to just pick something from like Amber or Tri-Repetate.
See, but because then you're just not getting the accurate
picture. It's just like I would pick that because it's, you know, the most sort of easy listening, you know? You don't want to scare people.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're not getting anything near the full picture from that. It's difficult. I've come up with that too, where people have, you know, heard that I had a podcast. I just say like, oh, we talk about music, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm much more socially awkward than you are. So
I know, but I was trying to think of a song that would be like, they won't like it, but they might understand why somebody could do a whole podcast about this.
My wife, you know, still doesn't understand how we do a podcast about it. It's been like 2 years. So
yeah,
I don't think one song's going to do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, what's next?
Yeah, from listener Peter, they say this show was also where I got what I think is the best Autechre T-shirt. It was a gray T-shirt with gray printing, which was barely visible. It said Autechre on the front, untilted on the back, if I recall correctly. Though it was light sensitive, so it showed up very clearly whenever someone took a flash picture of you. I felt the gray on gray color scheme very well captured what it was like seeing Autechre live during this era.
Yeah, I think I dug up the correct T-shirt with some Google searching. And, you know, there's not much to say about it. It really is, like, extremely minimal with just sort of, like, pure gray and then, like, the lightest gray Autechre on the front. And couldn't find a picture of the back, but very small Autechre wording there. But I don't know. I wanted to bring this up, this other part of Peter's email, because, like, when you listen to the 2005 tour, like, do you think of something so minimal? Because for some reason, this seems like a very Autechre shirt to me. But this tour is a lot more vibrant sounding than this, you know, because Peter's saying, like, he thinks it really sums it up, what it was like to see them live during that era. And I feel almost differently.
Yeah, I mean, I could see why you would make those connections if you were actually there, you know, because you're just memory and everything. But yeah, I agree. It does seem like one of the less minimally, you know, tours. But the shirt is pretty rad. I like the idea of the flash picture. And I think what he might mean, too, is that, you know, it sums up like seeing them, like physically seeing them, because they play in the dark. And so it is sort of like they're like two guys, you know, that are sort of gray in a black room, you know, kind of thing, you know, just dimly lit by the, you know, computers and equipment. So maybe that's what he means, but it is a pretty rad shirt. They have some cool shirts. Just the shipping on Warp's website is ridiculous to America. So I don't have any.
You weren't you were tempted to buy a shirt when you saw them in 2015?
They didn't have any. I purposely went and got cash because you can never, you know, you never know if they're going to take cards or anything. So I purposely went and got cash beforehand. And people had said, like, earlier in the tour that they had shirts. But Orlando was after like a break, and I thought, you know, maybe they just rode a plane there, and they couldn't bring all that stuff because they didn't have any merch whatsoever, no records, nothing for sale at all. Because I 100% would have bought one then. Yeah.
Well, that's a bummer. But next email from listener Joe. Joe writes, you've mentioned previously that both of you have a certain Tri-Repetate itch that nothing else can quite scratch, even other material by them from the same era. Well, I've never felt that about Tri-Rep before. I definitely feel it from time to time about Untilted, and especially in hearing you guys talk about this era. I can definitely say, though, that as much as I love the bootleg, it just doesn't scratch that itch. Like Gabe said, there's something so unique about the mixing that makes it so much more crisp and aggressive than anything else they've ever done, and creates an effect that feels like Untilted is playing inside my head instead of through my headphones. Although the music is compositionally similar on the bootleg, it just doesn't have that same effect. I really just want to echo what Joe said here about the, like, it feels like it's playing inside your head. There is something so, I can't even put it into words, but just something I love about Untilted, maybe my favorite thing about Untilted, is how, like, direct in it feels. Mm-hmm. It feels like the speakers are, like, making the noise instead of just transmitting the noise. Or, like, when you listen with headphones, it feels like you're thinking it instead of listening to it or something like that. And yeah, that's definitely missing from the bootleg for sure.
Yeah, that record, you're sort of not hearing the room. It's like you said, it's like that direct in sort of feel. And then obviously with a bootleg, especially a soundboard, audience recording, you are hearing the room. And right, obviously the mixing, like, does have to be different. I think it's, you know, it's two sides of a different coin or something. Like, Ottecker live is I think it's such a good thing of why they, like, do kind of make these live sets that aren't just playing songs from the record or something, you know, because they do like, I think they very much realize, you know, that difference. And it's really cool. It makes it, like, you know, like Grateful Dead, like, live stuff really rad, most of the studio stuff kind of shitty, you know. And Ottecker is like the live stuff super rad, studio stuff super rad, in a, you know, but in a different, they each have their own, you know, place and stuff. And I think that's, you know, again, speaks to you know, why they're so cool and why it's worth doing a podcast about them.
Yeah, definitely different. I'm glad that you know, both Untilted and the Glasgow soundboard exist. Mm-hmm. But yeah, also totally agree with Joe about getting that itch. I get that itch from Tri Repete, and I certainly get that itch. Honestly, like, all my favorite Ottecker records, there's just something about them that, like, no other record ever made, like, really can scratch it, you know. But what is our next email?
Yeah, from listener Torin. They say, I'm pretty new to AE live recordings. I listened to some of the 2015 officials with mild interest. That period is not my favorite sonic palette, and 2018 Dublin official is in regular rotation since its release, a masterpiece and the pinnacle of the 16 to 18 set. But otherwise, I haven't ventured into the AE bootlegs world until now. I'm stoked to follow along as you delve in as well. My suggestion is maybe to do at least two episodes, one for soundboards, one for audience recordings.
Yeah, I wanted to read this because, you know, maybe we can, like, talk a little bit about what our thinking is. Honestly, I'm just not really an audience recording kind of guy. Like, I just never want to listen to that unless, like, I absolutely have to hear what it's all about. And then even if I love it, it's not something I'm going to put on very often. You know, I feel like a lot of people are like this. It's all about the soundboards, really.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, I think I'm spoiled by, like, the access to quality recorded music we have, you know, now in our lives. Like, you know, with Ottecker, there's so much, you know, soundboards that, you know, you don't hear people yelling or talking during and stuff. And I pretty much with any, you know, artist that I get into live stuff, if I can get soundboards, you know, I much prefer it. You know, Grateful Dead, I'm a Dick's Picks kind of guy more than a, you know, archive.org, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, but I just want to read this to share our current thinking, which is, I think we're leaning toward maybe trying to cover, like, say a little bit about the famous 1996 Flex set in Vienna, which is a soundboard. Talk about the Toronto 2001, which is, like, such a treat of a soundboard. And then do one audience recording, just because soundboards do not exist, for the 2010 tour, maybe the Turin set or maybe the Melbourne set. But, you know, that's like the tantalizing. Like, I only want to talk about it because it's so tantalizing that they've said they have soundboards for that whole tour and have, like, teased that they may release it. So I feel like it would be fun. So maybe we'll split the difference, right? We'll do two of the most famous soundboards and then do one audience recording next episode.
Yeah, that seems like the fairest thing to do.
And then we'll talk about, like, maybe a bunch others as sort of honorable mentions or something like that. That's what we're thinking. All right. Here's more from listener Joe, who says, if it's not too late, I would love to suggest you guys give Coachella 99 at least one listen through. As has been mentioned many times before about it, Sean considers it to be a DJ set more than a live performance, but there's a lot of unique versions of known AE songs and also unknown material in there as well. Mostly, I want to get your take on the legendary Vangelis Pen Expers mashup. Did you check that out? I mean, I think we both have to listen to it a bit more, but we did try to focus in on that very tantalizing sounding Vangelis Pen Experts mashup.
Yeah, I did listen to that. It's pretty wild, you know. Vangelis is not really the same kind of style as Autechre, yeah. I don't think. And it's such a like strange mashup of this you know, song going nuts, you know, Pen Experts,
yeah.
And then Vangelis like basically going nuts in a different yeah. way, you know, like that symphonic, like you know, really like maximalist, you know, like you know, almost classical music sort of, but
right.
you know, through a synthesizer kind of thing. It really like is a crazy mashup and cool, because you know, Autechre doesn't really ever play with those sort of like string sounds that sound like strings, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
Vangelis is not really like messed with much.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I had listened to this a little bit, and then I kind of learned that it, or quickly realized that it was more of a DJ set, and so kind of put it aside. And, you know, I guess I just never really, you know, listened to it close enough to even notice what was going on at the beginning here until Joe sent this email. But it's so bizarre. It almost sounds like taking the piss a little bit. Like, I think they like Vangelis for sure, but there's something so bizarre about the combination of like the insane Pen Experts drums, like mm-hmm. just tripping all over themselves and like, you know, all that glitchy distortion on them with, like you said, like just the most glorious Wagnerian sort of string thing going on. There's just something like, I don't know, it makes me laugh, honestly, listening to it. But when I was sort of like, I spent a little while listening to this set, and I think Joe is right. It's kind of amazing because it's like a weird mishmash of stuff. Like, it's so weird to hear, you know, Bike go into Gelk, for example, you know, like jump from that far back mm-hmm. in Autechre's career, that far forward. And there's a bunch of stuff from Gescom's ISSSA on here, which I think is one of the main, you know, evidence that people seem to think this is like a Sean solo thing or something like that. But yeah, just the way it bounces around the discography and kind of, you know, that like that clean transition from Pen Experts into Glitch all the way back on the Amber days, and then all the way forward into the title track of ISSSA. It's quite a ride. I'm definitely going to spend more time with this one.
Yeah, it's neat because, you know, Autechre doesn't really ever do that, you know, like with
yeah,
the live sets.
Yeah,
it's always sort of, yeah, yeah, they've never really played the hits. And so it is interesting. I want to listen to the whole thing again as well.
All right, what's next?
All right, even more from listener Joe says, another bootleg I would love you guys to comment on is the legendary footage of them playing at Bojangles in Rockdale in 1991. Seeing a 20-year-old Rob and 18-year-old Sean play pretty conventional dance music in a club to intoxicated normies is obviously hilarious, but it's a very visual reminder of where their roots were, something that you guys talk about on the show all the time, but it's surreal to actually see. Gabe has speculated previously over whether their cavity job material would have sounded better in the context of a club, and given how the crowd is reacting, it seems like the answer is a resounding yes.
Yeah, this is worth seeking out. I had never seen this before, but you can just Google, you know, YouTube Autechre Rockdale 1991, and it is the strangest damn thing you've ever seen, because it really is a bunch of intoxicated normies like jumping around. I mean, it's so weird, of course, to see like Sean and Rob that young, to see like Sean with a full head of hair and stuff like that. But I don't know. There's something like while I was watching this, I couldn't stop thinking about, you know, there's a certain kind of Autechre fan that really, you know, loves the old days, like the early Autechre,
mm-hmm.
and thinks that as Autechre has gotten more quote unquote academic or whatever, they have sort of lost touch with their roots, or lost touch with the club and the dance floor that they, you know, the streets they were raised on, essentially. And it's just so funny, because I would dare any of those people to watch this footage and try to continue romanticizing like the early UK rave scene, because it's the goofiest goddamn thing you've ever seen. Like, just all these like, you know, goofy looking white kids just jumping around. And I don't mean, you know, they look like they're having a great time, and I am also like a goofy looking white guy, and I would also be jumping around the same way. But it just, you know, you get what I'm saying? Like, it is not like the romanticized early rave culture that it's touted to be when you're watching this.
Yeah, I mean, I think most things are like that, you know, especially as time marches on, you know, you only remember the good parts kind of thing. Mm. But yeah, the video is definitely worth checking out if only for historical purposes, you know, and stuff. It's fun seeing so early.
Yeah, and it's funnier than you're imagining, Ethan.
Yeah.
All right, next from listener Adam, who writes, "Hi guys, I just finished binge listening to the podcast after a colleague told me about it. Fittingly, I just finished the last episode the same day that you posted the new episode on the 2005 set. I have considered this set to be the greatest piece of music I've ever heard for many years. I was 18 when AE were playing this set, and I saw them play it live 3 times. I know it remains popular with fans today, but I still feel like it's a relatively small pool of people who keep coming back to this set considering how good it is, and that's obviously something to do with it being a bootleg. I think you guys, and especially Gabe, captured it pretty well. The music and beatwork is pretty fun and danceable with the most incredible unrelenting energy, yet because of all the acidic detail and melodic beauty, it must also be taken very seriously as a unique and jaw-dropping piece of art. When you think about it, that's the true goal of electronic music, making something that is both serious and fun, and in this set, I believe Autechre captured that in a way that is not been replicated before or since. I wonder if one day they will be able to put this out as an official release, marketing it as the quote-unquote legendary set that it is, and really building up some hype around it so it gets the attention it deserves. What do you think the odds are of that happening?"
I don't, you know, I would say not well, but then they released, you know, 30 something other live albums. So why the hell not, you know? I hope it does get released, you know, because this listener's right, you know, it does deserve that attention. It would be nice to have it, you know, where, you know, more casual fans could stumble upon it or find it, you know, easier and everything. So I hope it happens, but who knows, you know?
Yeah, I don't know why. This is like a pure guess, but I just have this weird feeling that they will, like, Autechre will figure out how to gracefully turn into something of a legacy act. You know how people, like, always like get lame as they kind of get old and start kind of revisiting their old stuff? But I feel like there are hints already based on them releasing all this live stuff, which, remember, they swore that they were not into and never wanted to
do.
Like, there's hints that maybe they are lightening up about revisiting stuff they've done before and kind of putting that stuff out there. This may be like wishful thinking, you know, heavy dose of copium, but it's like, I can imagine them being a little more liberal with the soundboards they release.
Yeah, I mean, I think, one, at this point, there's so much digital music that it's not like, you know, it's one thing to like print a CD and expect people to pay, you know, $20 for a CD of it. And another thing of like dumping them all on, you know, Spotify or Bandcamp or, you know, even the way they did it where you could pick and choose which ones you want to buy. And they were only, couple bucks or whatever. So it doesn't seem, it's like nowadays it's one, it's not as lame. And two, I think you're right. As they get older, I think like they don't really have anything left to prove. I mean, they've been at the top of the electronic game for 20 plus years now. You know, it's if they do something like release some live sets from 2005, it's not lame anymore. It's rad, and everybody, you know, it wants it. It's the same thing. We always bring up like Dylan, or I do at least, like Dylan's like bootleg series. You know, like if Dylan had released that, you know, like the one that collects everything, you know, recorded from 64 to 66, you know, if he had released that in 1970, you'd be like, oh, that's a bit of a cash grab. But when you do it 50 years later or whatever, it's just you're glad to have it at that point. And I think we're getting there with Autechre. You know, obviously it's not been 50 years, but and I hope they don't wait 50 years, but it's gotten to the point where, you know, they don't have anything left to prove, except that they've still got it, you know what I mean? And and they definitely still got it, so I think you can get away with releasing whatever you want kind of things, you know, old stuff, even those the Warp tapes, you know,
right
those came out and everybody loved them, and if they released a bootleg series kind of thing with tons of those, we'd all eat it up, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Warp tapes, I think there's a touch of sentimentality, a little bit, a little nostalgia on Sign, as we discussed. Maybe in their older years, they're getting more generous. Also, just wanted to mention, I like Adam's point about, you know, maybe the true goal of electronic music being making something that is both serious and fun. You know, maybe not everything. I think sometimes, like Autechre, for example, wants to be a little more cerebral, like on that 2018 tour and stuff like that. But I guess I kind of agree that for me, their peaks are when they kind of collapse that distance between mind and body, you know, and it kind of, you can enjoy it on either side, you know?
Yeah, I thought that was a great point from Adam. You know, like it's really, I think it takes a lot to mix like the, you know, Stockhausen Cage, you know, world of electronic music and the like, you know, fun Daft Punk world of it, you know, to take that, you know, the highbrow and the lowbrow and, you know, mash them together is really, you know, awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, what's next?
Yeah. More from listener Adam, who says, by the way, I will second a recent listener in saying that there doesn't appear to be any Aphex Twin podcast, so it has to go down as the obvious next choice. The only thing left to decide is the name. Children Talking, I Cast Because You Do, or Come to Potty.
I don't like that last one.
No. That sounds a little bit too much like potty. But I do like I Cast Because You Do. That one's pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I wrote down a couple others I wanted to run by.
Okay.
Some of these are not good. I'll just skip them. But 26 mixes for Cast.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Analog Bubblecast.
Eh.
Oh, come on.
Eh.
Okay. Computer Controlled Acoustic Podcast.
I like that one. I like that one.
All right. This one's actually good. Castic Window.
Oh, yeah. That one is good.
All right. But here's the real best one, because my original thought was like we would just keep it Gonkcast because we've been working on this brand for so long and we're any day now we're going to get a ton of sponsorships. I just know it.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But you know, he's got that EP Gak. We could call it Gakcast.
Oh, yeah. That's just a slight rebrand. That's better for the advertisers.
Yeah. Then we're kind of we're backing ourselves into a corner, because if we want to do any other artists, it's like you got to continue to think of some tweak on Gonk. But certainly thinking about the Aphex idea, probably leaning toward it. But it gives me some anxiety because, like, Autechre's are so mysterious that doing research on each release is not that hard. There's just not that much to know, and the rest is left for us to guess. But it feels like Aphex has, you know, books written about him and shit. So, like, I worry about all the work it would be to get that right, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I've been listening to this, Bob Dylan podcast recently.
Yeah,
and it's the same way, you know, there's so much. And like, I was listening to some, and I was like, oh, they forgot about, you know, this or that. And I'm like,
right.
Oh, well, because
then you're sending
hate
mail in.
Yeah, exactly. They don't have time to read, you know, 100 books each week or whatever, you know? So it is a little scary to do something that's not as niche as Autechre.
Yeah.
Especially for you. You do most of the work, so.
Yeah, well, we're continuing to brainstorm, but we appreciate the title suggestions. All right, last email for today from listener Pete, who says, one thing I would love for you to do is an episode of influences, both artists that influence Autechre and artists that Autechre influenced. If there's anybody out there trying to do something similar to what Autechre did in the 2000s and 2010s, I would love to hear about it. I feel like some of the recent Richard Devine stuff is going for a similar vibe, but mostly I don't know about anybody successfully doing this. A couple of people have suggested this, and I think it is something we want to try to do. We've talked before about how it's kind of tough because it's very hard to listen to Autechre and identify their influences. Like, you just read about their influences, but they so utterly transform the things that they're inspired by that it's like really tricky to pick it out. And then as Pete mentions, like, even trickier to pick out people that they genuinely influenced and who somehow actually approach what Autechre is doing, because it's just so unique. So I did kind of want to read this to acknowledge it. It is an idea we want to attempt, but just to encourage people, if anybody has like thoughts of, you know, this is an artist that I think really got Autechre and like really figured out how to use that inspiration and turn it into something, like, do write us and let us know who these folks are.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the one name I hear, you know, is Sophie a lot, which we've talked about a little bit, you know. But yeah, other than that, it's mostly, and maybe even her a little bit, it's, you know, plenty of people are inspired by them, but don't really, you know, sound like it kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's difficult, but I definitely want to do like influences of Ottekker, you know, kind of thing. Cause you know, a lot of the older hip hop and electro stuff, I'm not as familiar with. And also it would just be, you know, fun to learn about it.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I think like the trouble is that, like people who are inspired by Ottekker tend to be inspired by just the creativity of Ottekker. So it's like somebody like Sophie, it's like, it doesn't exactly sound like Ottekker, but you can, you know, you can sort of guess that maybe she's just inspired by how like endlessly inventive they are with sound design. And I think Ottekker are the same way themselves. Like the people they're inspired by, it's not necessarily the exact sound that they made, but it's just like their adventurousness and experimentation with sound. So these are hard things to parse out. And of course we would appreciate your help with that.
Yep. Well, that's it for this episode. So if you've got any Ottekker opinions or hot takes to share, we want to hear them. Send them. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. Next episode soon. More AE bootlegs. Again, send us your thoughts on those. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. And Spotify lets you review podcasts now, if you haven't noticed. Ooh. So do that. A bunch of people have already. And nice. thanks for doing that. Look us up on YouTube. Stay connected. Twitter, Instagram. Those are @GonkCastPod. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.